What is up, college baseball fans? Welcome to another episode of the 11.7 podcast. I'm here joined by Jack, and boy, was this weekend a lot of fun. Kind of separated the contenders from the pretenders. There's some teams that look very, very good right now, and like almost a lock to host regionals. Like, we're getting into that territory with only 5 weeks left, and there's also some teams on the other end of the spectrum that time is running out quickly. And so we're going to dive into all of that. We'll recap the weekend. We want to spend a good amount of time previewing not only the midweek, but also talking about like the future next 5 weeks, like what teams really need to do starting now to put themselves in either an at-large conversation or regional hosting conversation. And we'll highlight a few teams as well. But before we do all that, we got to do our home field apparel team of the week. And it's none other than the number one team in the country, Texas A&M Aggies. The Texas A&M Aggies are not only a really fun team to watch, they are also one of the most complete teams in college baseball. Like, it's hard to find a hole in their game, whether it's, their pitching is good, bullpen's great, offense is electric. They got young guys, they got old guys, grad transfers, they got it all. So Coach Lossnagel and the guys are rolling right now. Well-deserved number one team in the country. But we all know it doesn't matter what you ranked April 15th. It matters what happens in June. But we want to give a shout-out here. Homefieldapparel.com, we're partners with. And if you use our promo code CWS24, you get 15% off. So this is just a team of the week. If you're new to the show, every episode we pick a team that has kind of stood out or separated themselves. And we just highlight the merch that they have. So Texas A&M's got some cool 12th man stuff, a lot of football, few baseball. Like, look here, Jack, you love this? The Cream Olsen Magic 1989 Conference Champion shirt. They got it in white as well. So they got some for the ladies. You got the women's tank. Bunch of cool stuff. So shout out Home Field Apparel. Use our promo code CWS24 for 15% off. All right. I did all my talking. Jack, I want you to take the floor here. Rizgod Dimitri should be joining us at some point in the next 5 to 10 minutes. We'll make sure he has a grand entrance. But I want Jack to tell us about his thoughts. Just overall, what stood out this weekend? What do you want to talk about? Floor is yours.
I'm excited for the Rizgod Stone Cold Steve entrance. You beautifully yet again crushed the ad reads. And this ad read was so interesting because it's not the way that – it's not how Texas A&M is going about this 32-4 run, but it's the way that they're doing it. I mean, just absolutely boat racing a really good Vanderbilt team, right? Like, I mean, those first two games were insane, right? They have two guys in the top 10 in the country in homers and Laviolette and Lord Tubington and Mr. Montgomery, who would look just absolutely spectacular in that home field apparel, by the way. But to have the number two ERA in the country as well, like, they're about as complete of a ball team as you're going to find. And you know, we're a mid-major pods, and I know that a lot of our fans get a little upset at our SEC talk at the front of these podcasts, but I think it's mostly because it just catches your eye with these extremities of greatness and sometimes piss poor efforts. So let's go ahead and just start this thing off with the question that I think a lot of people want answered. Who's hitting the panic button harder? Is it Baton Rouge or is it Gainesville? Because you're right, time is running out, and I know that's what you were alluding to, but I think it says more about Tennessee. Like, I've been saying all year, I'm not worried about LSU. I was more so worried about the schedule. But you're right. Like, with only four conference weekends left, like, when do you start hitting it?
Yeah, let's just rip the Band-Aid off. the national championship curse might actually be real. Because let's take us back. Like, 2021, Mississippi State wins the national championship. Sure, they lost a boatload of players, not only to the draft, but injuries as well. And they come into 2022, and people are like, yeah, they should be good. They should be competitive, not as good as last year. And they end up finishing in last place in the SEC. In 2022, Ole Miss was kind of the same story, right? You know, Ole Miss caught fire in May and June, won a national championship as the last team in the tournament. And then going into the 2023 season, everybody was kind of like, yeah, they should be okay. You know, they're not great, but they got a lot of the transfer portal. You know, they lost Tim Elko and those guys who were there for 4 years, blah, blah, blah. This LSU story is wild to me because not only did they win the national championship as a team that spent a lot of their time number one overall in the rankings, it was like what people were talking about going into this year, like, yo, the pitching staff is going to be better. The offensive pieces, it's hard to replace a Paul Skeens or a Dylan Cruz or Trey Morgan and those guys. But listen, this LSU team is legit. Like they should be a top five preseason ranked team, and they could go back to Omaha and possibly win the whole thing. But you look, what we're 5 weeks into the SEC play. We got 5 weeks left, and they're 3-12, Jack. 3-12. It's not, dude, like the panic button was probably pressed 2 weeks ago. This is like, let's save our season. If we lose three or four more SEC games, we're going to be on the bubble. We lose five more SEC games, we're not making the tournament. So like time is running out quickly for the LSU Tigers. Meanwhile, the Florida Gators are still sitting at 7-8 in the SEC. I know their overall record, 18-17, it does not look pretty. But I think a lot of people, critics of the game, are saying, like, Florida was not a top 10 team or not a top 5 overall team, not a top 25 overall team. And I think people's gripes with Florida was they shouldn't be in the rankings. They're still, like, on some levels, yeah, a very talented team, and they've won four more SEC games than LSU at this point. So I don't think the panic button is being pressed as hard down in Gainesville, but the LSU story is wild. I mean, they have a one-game lead over Auburn for the worst SEC record 5 weeks in. I can't explain it.
It's the biggest question mark, where it's like they're the tale of two teams, where it's like Florida is strictly winning every SEC game on Sunday, and they did it again against South Carolina this weekend, who looked fantastic, by the way. That's a totally different competition. But for LSU, like they can't find a way to get out of their own way on Sundays. You know what I mean? Like, so now at that halfway mark with 15 more SEC
games. I don't think LSU has won a Sunday game. Like, not in the SEC. I think they've lost their last six. I think they've lost their last six going back to that Xavier series.
And I think it's because I saw them in Houston, where they swept that weekend, right? They beat Texas, the Cajuns, which I believe may have been – no, the Rage Cajuns obviously have lost since then. But and then Texas State that Sunday in the Houston College Classic. But it's like I still see all the talent in the world. So with 15 games in front of them, I'm looking at it right now, three with Missouri at Mizzou, three with Auburn at home, then A&M at the box – Alabama, Ole Miss, like to me in the weirdest way, it's like you can take care of business and go 4-2, 5-1, or even sweep Missouri and Auburn and find a way to go, all right, cool. Like now we're at 8-13, 9-12, right? Because what's that lucky number, right? 14, 15 SEC wins and you're guaranteed in for the most
part. Yeah, for the most part. 14-16 will get you, and I think it gets everybody in, or at least it has the last few years. 13-17, like it, you're going to have no bid stealers out of those one bid conferences. You're going to have, you're going to have a lot of things break your way or go out and win like three or four SEC tournament games. The thing with LSU, if the SEC tournament started today, they would not even make Hoover. The bottom two teams do not make Hoover. And like, as of right now, like they would be out. This will be the last thing I say about LSU, because I know their fans are sulking right now. Good. I'm glad they won a national championship last year, because that holds, I always say, about 5 years. You can hold on to the national championship for 5 years. But if they don't, at minimum, you have to go 5-1 in your next six SEC games. With Missouri and Auburn back-to-back, minimum 5-1. Like, you need to go 6-0, put yourself at 9-12. Then you're like kind of feeling okay, but minimum 5-1. That is the recipe. If you don't go 5-1, like, you can kiss your chances of any kind of postseason baseball out of the picture.
It's crazy. It is crazy. What else stood out to you, man, this weekend? You crushed it on the admin account. I was kind of at the tail end of my crossover season, but the ACC is still insanely like up for grabs. I think NC State kind of like, after a couple of rough weekends, go, hey, we still got all the talent in the world, and they go upset Clemson. That was really impressive to me.
Yeah, no, that series was a lot of fun. And I called it on the 11.7 Twitter. Like, NC State is such a roller coaster of a team. They go, and I don't remember everything. Give me one second. I'm pulling it up right now. But they, let's see, an ACC player. They swept Boston College. Then they go and get swept by Georgia Tech. They win 2 out of 3 against number 7 Duke. And then they they sweep Notre Dame. So at that point, you're like, wow, we are, you know, 8-4 in ACC play with a sweep over Notre Dame, sweep over Boston College. If we could have just won one of those games at Georgia Tech, like, we'd be feeling really good. But then they go and get swept at Louisville, who Louisville was struggling at the time. And they lose the midweek to East Carolina and then UNCW. And you're like, man, this NC State team, the magic is gone. And remember, we went to that Saturday game where you broadcasted Duke at NC State. And we got to see Sam Heifel pitch. He threw a gem. Or that was a Friday game, actually. Yeah. But you were on the call. And we were like, I remember talking after the game, like, man, this NC State team is talented. Like, they have the guys and, like, the pieces, and they're playing well together. Like, they could easily host a regional this year. But then to answer the bell, they go at Clemson this weekend. Nobody's given them any chance in the world. Like, they're on a 5-game losing streak, and they go out and win Friday. They go win Saturday, and they win the series at number 2 Clemson. It was like, wow, this NC State team is a roller coaster. Now, it doesn't get easier for the guys, for the Wolfpack. You get Campbell this midweek, 3 against UNC, and then at East Carolina. So that's their next 5 games. If they can win 3 of those games, I think they're going to be pretty happy with themselves. Or if they win 4 or 5, it's like, wow, this is a legitimate hosting team.
Yeah. It's going to be really interesting as I love how the pretenders and contenders, like the top 5 teams in the country, feel like they've really run away, right? Whether it's Oregon State or Arkansas, those teams have clearly become bona fide studs, even Duke, right? Like, taking care of business against a team they were supposed to beat, and they do. But for that middle of the pack in the ACC, like, Louisville keeps hanging around. And like, all of a sudden, Wake Forest is back and better than ever with Nick Kurtz becoming a freaking alien. Like, what he's doing right now is so stupid.
He's 10th in the country in home runs with, like, 50 less at-bats than everybody else.
Missed, like, 3 weeks of the season, guys. Mm-hmm. It's so insane. So, and to that point, like, that's what Alex Makarevich, APAC 99, kind of feels like to me. Like, he feels like a dude that can put his team on his back and go a little bit. I joked with that. If you were watching this weekend, if you weren't, you need to go find it. He had, like, the most athletic swim move dive into home to steal a run against Clemson. I was like, dude, you're not supposed to move like that at that size. Like, he's a legit D end, like, hitting a swim move on an NFL left tackle. Like, he's got that, like, first round bona fide, like, ton of college baseball experience swagger to put the pack on his back and go do something crazy, kind of like what Kurtz is doing with Wake Forest right now.
Yeah, last I checked, Makarevich is somewhere in the top 5 in the country in RBIs, switch hitter, somebody that has been there, done that before in the postseason. And, you know, we got to interview him after the game, NC State Duke, and, dude, just such a down to earth guy, like, very soft spoken, kind of goofy. And, but you can just tell, like, he has a lot of confidence in himself. It was a big jump for him to leave East Carolina and go to NC State. There was a lot of negative talk from East Carolina fans, like, saying that he abandoned the ship, but he did it to get better as a player. And it's no knock on East Carolina player development. But sometimes, like, as a player, if you've been told the same thing for 4 straight years, it doesn't allow you to, like, grow and see different perspectives. And I'm sure he's doing 99% of the exact same thing he was doing at East Carolina. But it's, like, that extra 1% that he gets a different perspective on in the box that has helped him, like, go from somebody that might hit 10 homers and 50 RBIs in a season to looking around right now, and, like, he's close to 60 RBIs. So it just, like, the transfer portal is not always a bad thing. You spend 4 years at a school and you transfer because you need a change of scenery and a new coaching philosophy or whatever. Like, that's a good thing. And he's done it. But going back on your point with the ACC kind of just being, like, jumbled up, it's a cluster right now. But something that has stood out to me that I don't think I've seen anywhere on social media, the UNC Tar Heels are 23-0 at home this year, Jack. They have not lost in 23 games at home. They're 14-4 in the ACC, good for first place. And, like, honestly, the schedule is, like, somewhat favorable for them down the road. Like, this could be a team, if they take care of business. They got a big one on Tuesday against Coastal Carolina at home, so history says they should win it. But you get like Gardner Webb in the midweek, Charlotte, Virginia Tech, NC State, Louisville, and then that last series at Duke will be a big one. But this UNC team, they're young, they're spunky, and then they also have first-round talent with, Vance Honeycutt. Hook is a really good hitter. I think this is a highly underrated UNC team going right now, and they're not getting the respect that like a lot of other teams with their resume have.
Yeah, we were fortunate to see him at home too, and like we got there like because we're kind of nerdy about it, but get there like 3 hours before and watch batting practice, and I feel like that kind of tells you everything you need to know about a team, right? Like they were loose, they were light as hell. The Anthony D'Onofrio kid is like got one of my favorite stories in college baseball, like working to get him on a podcast because his journey throughout the transfer portal is everything that's right with the college sports landscape. We hear so much about the craziness and the 1%. That's a dude that's busted his tail to earn this opportunity. And like the moment's never been too big for him. And you're right. And I think it's because maybe like there is that like that first round talent and Honeycutt and those guys, but for a team that refuses to lose at home, and in contention to like lock down a regional spot and a regional host site, like you're right. Why aren't we talking about a blue blood college baseball program? You know what I mean? Like it feels weird. And I think it's because the ACC has been so drunk this year that like we're so caught up with the mayhem of it, right? It's not like the Big 12 where like nobody feels like they want to win the damn conference. Like in the ACC, it's been Florida State, Clemson, North Carolina, kind of head and shoulders above everyone, and then everyone else jockeying from the middle of that pack. But you're right. They've kind of like separated themselves, and no one's really talking about it because how insane the middle ground is.
Well, and the cool thing about the ACC is, like, throughout the season, there's been probably five of these teams in the upper tier of the ACC jockeying for that number one ranking. For a while, we've seen, like, Duke jump up towards the number one spot. There was a point in the season where Virginia looked like the best team in the country. Florida State started out the longest undefeated streak to start the season. And like they're still playing really good baseball. Clemson has flirted with that number one, number two overall seed. Number one, number two ranking. And Wake Forest started the year there. And like as far as talent goes, I still think the Wake Forest team, when all healthy, like probably has the best talented or the most talent on the roster. But it's so debatable. I look at teams like Duke, Virginia, NC State, Florida State, Clemson as like they can beat anybody on any weekend. It's like which team is going to show up. So it'll be interesting. 5 weeks left in the regular season. Plus you get that awesome ACC tournament. And I mean, this could be a 4, 5, maybe 6 hosting site, a hosting conference.
Love that.
Yeah, I mean, I could legitimately see 6 of these teams hosting a regional. It's nuts, dude.
I see more ACC hosts than I do SEC, which is when's the last time we were able to say that?
I don't know. Probably like 2010s sometime, right? In there. But, dude, you're right. Like, I think the SEC has a much more top-heavy conference because, I mean, everybody knows, like, Arkansas, Texas A&M, Tennessee, Kentucky – like they're all taking care of business in SEC play. But there's a lot of teams on the bottom end of the SEC who are like lucky to win one game a weekend because Arkansas and Kentucky and Tennessee and Texas A&M have so many sweeps. Like they've just been sweeping everybody, it feels like.
Yeah. Kentucky, we haven't even talked about Kentucky yet. 14-1 in the first 5 weeks of SEC play is so stupid. And I love so much that, like, as someone who studies the, like, I guess the journalism side of it, there's not a single individual in the country. And that's not a fault, right? Like, that's just how cool this damn sport is, that nobody saw this coming. I would be willing to bet that nobody in the state of Kentucky saw this coming either.
You're right. And one more, like, nugget about Kentucky is they're 12-0 against Quadrant 1 teams. Like, how is that? Like when you lay their resume out, like I know they slipped up and lost 2 out of 3 to Kennesaw State the weekend before SEC play. But when you put the resume out, like it's honestly a better resume than Texas A&M. Texas A&M 11-4 in SEC play, 6-3 against Quadrant 1. I mean, right now, if you look at Kentucky, like they have the best resume in the country.
Not even
30-5 overall, 14-1 in SEC play, 12-0 against Quadrant 1. Like it's nuts to me, but at the same time, like, rankings do not matter. I want to emphasize that again. But Kentucky, Tennessee, Arkansas, Texas A&M, they have been the most consistent of the SEC teams. Meanwhile, there's teams that I think can win the whole thing, like the whole College World Series, in like Vanderbilt, South Carolina, Alabama show that they could win a 2 out of 3 series against number one team in the country. So I think there's a lot of sleepers in the SEC that just are waiting to get like red hot. But I was super impressed with South Carolina this weekend. I've been more impressed with Georgia. Like, when they pitch the ball well, they're going to be just fine. And then the team that took the biggest leap, in my opinion, was obviously Alabama, defending the home turf, winning 2 out of 3 against Arkansas. And, you know, that gives them just enough confidence and boost to maybe rattle off a few series wins in a row.
I would be willing to say, like, whenever we get to Hoover, whoever wins the SEC championship is going to be, like, I would say, like, whoever's 6th or 7th in odds to win that damn thing, like, will be whoever wins it. You can see a team like Alabama, who, in my opinion, like, when you stack the talent, like, when you look at Arkansas, you're looking at 4 or 5 potential, like, big leaguers. And with Alabama, not to say that you don't necessarily see that, but it's like, this was a team where, like, are they going to blackball the program a year ago? And now they've just kind of been able to roll and deal with the punches. And I think that's a lot like Kentucky, where, you know, if you're a hypothetical investor in college baseball and I look at Kentucky every weekend, like, I'll say, like, I keep waiting for the sky to fall in a little bit, right? Like, 100%. Do any of them scare me? Right. But because, like, I'm a Charleston guy, I know that, like, Trey Pooser on Saturday, a College of Charleston transfer, is like a super calm, easy 93-94 with crazy arm side run with his two seam fastball. So it's like, I know they got great pieces, but, like, do they scare you? And I'll tell you what does scare me is that Nicky Lopez might contend with Ben Miller of Duke with the best mustache in baseball. Lopez, who never hit over 300 at Southern Cal, is now hitting dang near 400 clip with that sweet fireman stash. Like, that's got to be talked about more.
Yeah, you're right, though. Like, there's not that one player that stands out. Like, they don't have a Charlie Condon. Like, they don't have a Jack Caglione. Like, they're winning games the old-fashioned way, and that is, like, by all means necessary. If you need to bunt, if you need to hit and run, if you need a guy to throw 3 innings out of the bullpen when he's just a 1-inning guy, they've just been piecing it together, like, really well this year. But if you're Kentucky, and, like, you're a Kentucky baseball fan maybe joining us for the first time, or just an SEC fan or college baseball fan in general, like, this week, starting Monday, April 15th, is the most important week of the season. You get 2 against your in-state rival, Louisville. You're at home on Tuesday, on the road. Well, No, I think it's just 1 against Louisville. Warren Nolan has it all mixed up. It says they're playing at home Tuesday and then on the road Tuesday against Louisville. Like, they're going to play a doubleheader at 2 different sites. I doubt that's what's going on, but anyways, you play Louisville midweek, and then you get 3 at home against the number 4 team in the country, the Tennessee Volunteers, who have shown very few signs of weakness recently. Like, Tennessee is a team that, like, they would scare me. If I'm an SEC team, like, they would scare me. Let's see, they're coming off 4 straight SEC series wins after they slipped up against Alabama. And just kind of boat racing teams. Like, this weekend, Tennessee absolutely manhandled LSU. Like, LSU only scored 8 runs total this weekend. Yeah. It was crazy.
Yeah, Drew Beam looked killer. He posted on Instagram today, like, just some, like, cool flicks of him shoving on the mound, and he did it to the play me that mountain music. He played it to the it was sweet. I was like, man, these guys are cold. And Christian Morris keeps dealing. Blake Burke's ability to hit those, like, Ken Griffey-esque, like, swingman homers.
And then, exit velo, I don't believe. Like, when he swings and connects with a pitch and it shows up, like, exit velo 101.5, I want to add 10 miles an hour to every single one of his home run balls, because it just looks different.
It really does look different. It feels different, because that one that he hit to opposite field, like, dang near on the left field foul pole, like, he missed it. He absolutely missed it and still left the yard, which tells you what. I'm like, when he gets a hold of baseball, it's like, I don't buy the 420, 430. Like, it looks like it's fucking 510 feet.
Yeah, it's the way that jumps off the bat. I mean, it's the definition of the wiffle ball swing, right? Yeah. The ball, like, he's just so quiet in his stance and, like, kind of has a little flick of the wrist. And then, like, it's King Griffey Jr.-esque. Like, that's a great way to put it. The ball just jumps off of his bat when he barrels it up. He's fun to watch. He's hitting over 400 this year, which is nuts. And like Christian Moore is like top 10 in the country in homers. Nobody's talking about him. So like Vitello, I think, has the group of guys. And it's cool because they're in the number four team in the country right now. But there's three SEC teams ahead of them. So he can kind of sit back and be like, all right, we're going to be this dark horse. Like, not a dark horse necessarily, but we're going to fly under the radar. And we're going to get after teams. And I think that's exactly what he wants.
Yeah, they do. And they've got the veterans around him, like a kid like Kirby Connell, who just broke the Tennessee all-time appearance record at like 106. They have these crafty Southpaw dudes that like have been around the program for 5+ years. And like they understand what it means to be a volunteer. They've like, they went last year. They understand the heartbreak of 22. They understand like to be like that target on their back in 21. And this year, you're right, because they're maybe not being talked about like Arkansas or A&M, like they're just kind of flying under the radar at like the number four seed in the country, which is hard to say, but it's true.
Right. Versus, you know, just 3 years ago, or let's see, 2022, when they were like the talk of college baseball, not even just college baseball. I felt like every baseball fan in America knew about the Tennessee Volunteers and that villain mindset that they had. This year's much different. It's not the same Tennessee team that we saw in 2022. Now, here's a cool little segment I want to do just real quick, kind of as we're blending SEC baseball with the rest of the country. We have four guys right now that I think can all make a case for Golden Spikes. You know how the Golden Spikes, like they'll come out with their quarter finalist and then they'll narrow it down to semifinalist. And then it's like, here's your finalist. They should just go ahead and skip to the finalists, because between Charlie Condon, Jack Caglione, Brayden Montgomery, and Travis Bazzana, like those are your four best amateur baseball players in the country. Look, I love Chase Burns. I think his strikeout numbers are ridiculous. Same thing with Hagen Smith. Like another outing of like he didn't get double digit strikeouts, but he was unhittable on Friday at Alabama. But like I love those two guys. Like I like the what's his first name? Tanner Thatch from UNCW, who's got like close to 20 homers. Same thing with Lyle Miller Green. Like those mid major guys are always fun to have in the conversation. But there are not, there's nobody that is having a good, Nick Kurtz could make it. I'm thinking about it now. Nick Kurtz could make it interesting as like that fifth player, just because of the tear that he's been on. But between Hags, Bazzana, Montgomery, and Charlie Condon, it's like, they should just go ahead and make those four the finalists right now and just play out the rest of the year. Who has the best last 5 weeks?
It feels like what Condon's doing isn't sustainable, and then he just does it every weekend. You're like, oh, he's still doing it. That's nice. Like he's still slugging over 1,000.
24 homers.
It doesn't make any sense. I think Brayden Montgomery is playing himself into being the number one pick in the draft. I really do.
I think so too. I said it like 3 weeks ago, and Demetri called me crazy.
No, yeah, Rizgod did. I remember when I asked you, I was like, hey, break it down, your top five picks. He is without question playing himself into the number one overall pick. I just think because of like the way that he carries himself a little bit. Mm-hmm. But like what Cags is doing, again, I think we've just almost, it's like LeBron in the NBA. Like we're just almost like too appreciative. Like we're not appreciative enough of what he's doing. But I was going to make you put Lyle Miller Green in there. I was going to make you do it. He's got a 5 ERA on the bump. He's beaten SEC teams. He's got the 18 homers. I think he's tied with Bazzana. Is Montgomery still at 18 homers too?
No, Montgomery hit his 19th.
So he's at 19, so he's in that two spot. Yeah, well, it's just
– Yeah, so Condon has 24. Let me just read off the stats because the listeners might not know. I should have done this to start. But Charlie Condon's season so far, batting average 482. He's got an 1109 slugging. And a 1695 OPS, which if you don't know what OPS means, it basically means how many bases are they getting per at bat? So he's almost getting 2 bases per at bat. And he's got 12 doubles, a triple, 24 homers to lead the country, 52 RBIs, 32 walks in 36 games. Nuts. And then Caglione, you know, in the box, like as a hitter, 394, 1319 OPS, 20 homers, 41 RBIs, 20 walks, only 14 strikeouts though. But the funny thing about Cags is he only has 2 doubles. Like he either hits a single or the ball goes over the fence. And well, I know one of his doubles hit the wall in the air. So it was like close to being a homer.
I was going to say, and you know why, it's because he rattles them off the wall so hard that it gets those outfits can't run on the base path that quick.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, Jack Caglione last year, he broke the BB Corps home run record. He hit 33 homers in a season. It looks like Condon's going to shatter that record. He only needs 9 more to tie, and you got like 20 something games left, plus SEC, potential regional, super regional, college World Series. Like, Cags played in 70 games last year. But it's funny because Cags has hit 20 in 35 games, so he's on pace for 40 if he played that many this year. He won't, because Florida won't make it to the championship. I'm assuming that. But if you put Charlie Condon in 70 games, he's on pace for 48 homers. And the record is 33. It's nuts. But then, of course, like, Jack Caglione on the mound as well. I can pull up his pitching stats here in a second. I'm just on D1 baseball site. But let me move on. Braden Montgomery hitting 380. He's slugging 1,400, 11 doubles, a triple, 19 homers, 58 RBIs. And that 58 RBIs is tied for the nation's lead. And he has 33 walks in 36 games, 4 stolen bases. And last but not least, Travis Bazzana out on the West Coast. Second baseman hitting 455, slugging 1635. So his batting average and his OPS are almost identical to what Charlie Condon's doing. Bazzana has 8 doubles, 4 triples, 18 home runs out of the leadoff spot. Plus, he has 45 RBIs out of the leadoff spot. And here's the most impressive stat. 45 walks in 34 games and only 15 strikeouts. And he's got 8 stolen bases. So it's dude, it's nuts. Like, those four guys are just in a league of their own right now. I mean, sure, Nick Kurtz is hitting 333, 16 homers in 29 games. Like, that's really good, but like, he needs the volume that the other guys have to see those eye-popping numbers.
You stole my factoid from me. Because I just can't even fathom it, I almost think the 45 walks to 15 punchies is more impressive than the leadoff homers that Bazzana's hitting out west. I like to have that plate discipline and approach, and to like know that nobody wants to throw to you, and to still like take your walks as and be able to like produce the way he has is so ignorant. It's so ignorant.
Yeah. And it's so cool. Like, as a unbiased college baseball fan, and you're the same way, sitting back and like getting these updates on social media, or you'll be watching the games, and it's like, okay, Condon homers in the first. Well, Cags just homered in the third. Oh, you know, Braden Montgomery starts an hour later because he's Central time. He hits a homer in the first. Oh, Montgomery hits a second homer of the game in the fourth. Oh, you know what? Like, Bazzana hasn't even played yet. What does he do? Oh, he leads off the game with a homer. Like, this is as close to that 1998 home run race with McGuire, Sosa, Bonds, King Griffey Jr. Like, this is what it's shaping up to be. Every single one of those guys is on pace to break that 33 home run record. Some of them will slow down. Some of them will, like, not be pitched to anymore. But, like, I think we're going to see a 35, maybe a 40 homer season from somebody. It's nuts, dude.
If you got all of them together – at Charles Schwab Field, and we did a little home run derby. Who are you taking?
That's a good question. I need to see their batting practice. Like, as a former player, you're probably the same way, and we get to see like Vance Honeycutt and BP, and like, he's not even in this stratosphere of these four guys. Like, athleticism he is, but as far as like a power hitter goes, I don't think he's quite there. But dude, he was just backside peppering balls over right field with the most effortless swing. So like, I have not seen Condon take BP. I haven't seen Bazzana. I definitely haven't seen Montgomery and Cags. I haven't seen take BP, but like, so I imagine that those four can pretty much hit a homer at will.
At every swing. Like, I think Cags would be the most. Cags would do kind of like what Aaron Judge did in that one home run derby where like, he was just hit like 450 backside, like really stupid. And to your point, like, I got to see, and this was kind of when Wake was in the middle of that trip, I got to see Kurtz when I called that Coastal Wake game. And I remember watching his EP going, he's just trying to do too much right now. Like, he's just like getting really big. And then he got out of the cage, he disappeared, and he came back out. And then he just started peppering the left center wall. And I was like, wow, that was really impressive. Like, didn't really run any out. And someone was like, man, but he didn't hit any homers. It was like a bunch of little kids like standing behind me. Like, he didn't hit any homers. And I was like, he's about to have a stupid day. And then sure enough, he hit two homers in that midweek game. And I was like, it's just like for some of those guys, like, you're right. Maybe they're not like BP dudes. But mm-hmm. watching Jack Kags hit baseball like 480, you're like, oh, that's going to play pretty much at any time he picks up a bat.
Right. Let's have a fun little segment here that I think the listeners will love. You remember, I think they stopped it in like 2017 or 2018, but the every year in Omaha, they would have a college home run derby, right?
Yeah,
and like my old roommate, like still good friend of mine, Kyle Lewis, got to participate. He sucked. I still give him hell for that. But he was saying like it was just such a cool experience because it was eight of the best home run hitters in the country got to go out there, national stage. It was on ESPN2 and like compete for a home run derby title in Omaha. And like this would be the perfect year to bring it back, right? Like yeah. You could easily get eight guys, and these would be my eight right now that I would love to see in a home run derby. It would be Condon, Caglione, Montgomery, Lyle Miller-Green from Austin Peay, who hit one like 480 or 485 a couple weeks ago. Just brute strength. He's got 18 homers this year. Bazana, I would add Nick Kurtz, that's six. James Tibbs, seven. And Dakota Jordan, eight. Those would be my eight. I would love, love, love to actually sneak. I might take Lyle Miller-Green might get cut. Not because, I mean, I love him. He's got brute strength. But Blake Burke might actually be my pick for the eighth. I completely forgot about Blake Burke. But those are the guys that when you're watching a game, and it doesn't matter if you know anything about baseball, when they hit the ball, like barreled it up, perfect, perfect, MLB The Show reference there. But when they get the perfect, perfect, the ball like is significantly coming off the bat harder than anybody else.
It
looks like an MLB hitter. So that would be my eight. And I would love just to see them battle it out, home run derby style. Like that would do numbers on ESPN2 or you or whatever.
I even think about a couple guys. I'd throw Petri in that mix. I know Ethan Petry in that mix, like what he's doing is like still like flying right under the radar in his like sophomore like slump of a year. And then like you look up and he's hitting backside homers every at bat. There'd be some fun ones. I'm with you.
It needs to happen. Like we can put up $100,000 grand prize and like those guys would be like, yep, let's do it.
Yeah, wait, why don't we do it? Why screw ESPN? Why don't we do it?
If we can raise $100,000, we can do it.
Okay. And give 50.
Start asking 50. Investors. Dude, all we need is just one rich investor that is sitting around like, man, I need some entertainment. I don't want to go hunting in Africa anymore. Like, I don't want to go deep sea fishing. I don't want to go hike the mountains. I don't want to go skiing. Like, I want to have a home run derby amongst college baseball players. We just need to convince that one guy. Put up a big prize. Let's rent out Charles Schwab Field and a few cameras, and let's get after it. Be a blast. Easy. I just solved the problem.
Investor, possibly you.
Possibly you. Well, I got distracted. Like I want that to happen. Let's kind of like preview the week or the week ahead here. This weekend was great. I think I mentioned it earlier, but It was a very important week. I call it like moving week almost. Every year around mid-April, you find teams that are either going to decide like, hey, we're going to figure this thing out, or we're going to lay down and just try to get through the rest of the season. And there's a few teams that were super disappointing. There's a few teams that like made big moves. The midweek is important, as we always say, and there's some big midweek matchups. It looks like the weather's going to be nice pretty much everywhere. And like, after that, I mean, we can kind of preview what to expect moving forward. But like, man, I really don't have much for the rest of this episode. I really just want to hit on those points we've already talked about. So what are some midweek matchups that have kind of like standing out to you? I know there's about five or six like really good ones. I call them RPI games because you need to win them. I know your conference record matters, but like there's a few RPI games in the midweek where if you can win it, like it'll boost the RPI to a good number.
There's like eight or nine that I had highlighted to end our episode. And to your point, those midweek, like Kentucky, Louisville is a huge in-state rivalry. You want to talk about RPI. Kentucky's already lamenting themselves as like a top tier team in the country, but like Louisville's getting it going. Gotten to talk with Coach Dave McDonald. Ben straight up told him, I got you guys in Omaha this year. He says, let me see what I can do. They're freaking buzzing for the 11.7 brand. So that's a huge midweek for those guys. But how about DBU and Oklahoma State? DBU scuffling a little bit. Not to say that they're not going to be right there at the end of the – I think they're going through the hot, cold, hot theory right now. So a big one with
Oklahoma State. They certainly are.
You know what I mean? They're right in that hot, cold, hot theory. So if they can get a win against an Oklahoma State team, who I've been really impressed with in Big 12 play. But, Ben, there's a really fun one out west. And I know we didn't talk a ton about the Pac-12 this episode, but how about an Arizona team that just refuses to lose right now? Sitting at
11 straight wins. Swept La Tech.
11 straight. And that La Tech series, like, La Tech gave them a run for their money in a couple of those games. I think they lost 6-3 yesterday. They got Grand Canyon this weekend. And I just feel like Grand Canyon always gives those big-time Power 5 West Coast teams, like, fits in those midweeks. So I'm really excited for that game as well.
Yeah. A few more that I want to add on. Like, the Raging Cajuns – we tweeted out the graphic yesterday, but they got a 4-game lead on the Sun Belt. Like, second place is 4 games back of them. They're 28-9, ranked 14th in the country, but they go to a tough Hammond America. Southeastern Louisiana, the record doesn't look good, but this is a team that should have beat LSU in a midweek earlier in the year. They usually have a really good crowd. These two, like Hammond and Lafayette, are not far from each other. And I expect, like, the Raging Cajun crowd to kind of travel to this game. Like, that'll be a fun one to watch on ESPN+. I always love watching, you know, Louisiana, Texas, Mississippi midweek baseball, because the fans usually travel. And, I don't know, make it a good environment. But, like, William & Mary is another team that's hosting East Carolina. And William & Mary is 25-11 overall, 8-4 in that CAA conference. And, like, East Carolina is playing some of the best baseball in the country right now. They threw 2 no-hitters last week, and I know they lost on Sunday. They kind of lost the game late to Charlotte, but still won the series. They're number 9 in the country for a reason. Like, I'd watch out in Williamsburg. Williamsburg, Virginia, they got a good team in William & Mary. So that might be my, like, long shot. That might be, like, my long shot upset pick there, especially with a possible, like, look ahead for East Carolina, because they have Old Dominion and then they have Wichita State coming to town this weekend. So that's a big series there. There was a couple other big ones that I wanted to talk about. Oh, UNCW is hosting Wake Forest, and UNCW already has a couple big midweek wins this year. They're in first place in the CAA. They won it last year. They won the tournament last year, and yeah, they look good. I mean, they've beaten NC State. They've beaten Coastal Carolina, both in the midweek this year. I don't know. I just think they're a good team. So
that's a big one. There's, if you listen to us last week, your hypothetical investors out there, go put your $11.70 on all these underdogs last week, cash cow. The other big one too, that we just mentioned, that North Carolina home game winning streak. So you know what that means? It's in jeopardy. They play host to Coastal Carolina. That's going to be an awesome matchup. I feel like Coastal Carolina is really starting to get into the swing of Gillies last year and are starting to play their tails off a little bit in Sun Belt, which has become an absolute hot mess. So I think they could go upset North Carolina. Texas Tech and Arkansas. I think Texas Tech
could beat Arkansas. I forgot about that.
I mean, Texas Tech could beat Arkansas in that midweek, Ben. I think they play it twice, too.
I think they play Tuesday, Wednesday.
Tuesday, Wednesday, guy. I definitely think they can sneak a game. I think their offense is on brand, if not better than Arkansas. I just think Arkansas's pitching is so stupid. But their offense is starting to wake up a little bit. And then Wednesday, it's the Riz God Bowl. UC Irvine and Southern Cal again. Run it back.
Yep. The Riz God Bowl. Yeah, he wasn't able to join us today. He said his internet was just way too bad. He's still getting it figured out over there in Italy. But yeah, dude, like this week – like this week is very important, especially in those bigger conferences that are all jumbled up, Big 12, Sun Belt, ACC, SEC. Like this is the big week here, because you can ride like a 5 or 6 week momentum into the postseason. Like it happens every year. We see Big 12 teams do it. We've seen them do it the last 2 years, right around this time. So, like, even if you're down on your team, like, even if you think, like, man, like, this is just, like, if you're a Florida fan, like, man, we suck this year. It just takes, like, one good week to, like, get the boys rolling. And I think there's a lot to look forward to. So, I know Jack's about to go golfing here with the College of Charleston staff, or, yeah, okay. College of Charleston staff.
College of Charleston low. Took two or three from UNC Wilmington 2 weeks ago. They're rolling. The Cougs are feeling first.
There's a lot of good mid-major teams rolling right now. In fact, like once we end this episode, me and Rizgod are going to get on the phone, do our mid-major top 25. We were not able to do it yesterday. I have a sick 2-year-old that was keeping me up all night, so I didn't have a chance to do it yet. But anyways, we'll be back another episode. Probably Wednesday, Wednesday morning, Wednesday evening, whenever. We'll have it out by Thursday. Weekend series pick 'em, the whole shebang. And this is just prime college baseball season right now. The Masters is over with. March Madness is done. MLB season's getting boring. So, like, let's invest in some college baseball. Let's do it. Baby.
Game on.
Awesome. All right. Hope everybody takes care, and we'll see you guys back here in a couple days.